Merci, merci Delphine pour l'invitation. I'm very glad to be here and to share my knowledge with you all. Yes, basically the topic, my presentation is dealing with the sub-Saharan migrants in Libya. And the period that I cover during my presentation is range from 1990s until 2014. Up to 2014, not because the situation in Libya or the issue of migrants in Libya is solved after the 2014, but basically for a personal reason, because after the 2014 I don't have the chance to get the access to the field, and so my presentation basically is dealing with primary sources that I was able to collect in Libya since 2008 up to 2014, and maybe in the future, if I will lucky, I will be back in Libya. But so up to now, I will stop basically mostly on 2014. So the beginning, I think that is very well known. So Libya has become one of the main destination country for sub-Saharan migrants, for sub-Saharan worker during the 1990s and, of course, during the 2000s. There was also a lot of migrants from other Arab countries like Egypt or Tunisia. But once again, my angle, my perspective of research is dealing mostly with sub-Saharan migrants. The reason for those migration are multiple reasons. Of course, the instability in many African countries, and instability, conflict, but also the fast-growing Libyan economy that was attracting a lot of sub-Saharan migrants in Libya, and also the political change, the strong political change in Gaddafi foreign policy from pan-Arabism to pan-Africanism. Just to mention very quickly, in 1998, Gaddafi was promoting the creation of the community of Sahel and Saharan states, and then in 2002, Gaddafi was one of the main promoters of the African Union. But those organization was intended to create an area, a space of free market and free movement. And really, Libya was opening the southern border to the sub-Saharan migrants. Not for chance, in the same year, in 2002, Gaddafi celebrated the Libyan Development Plan using African manpower. Just a few minutes about the numbers. During late 1990s, early 2000, Libyan population is around 6-7 million peoples. 6-7 million people. We have in Libya about 10% of the population are regular migrants, and then we have a lot of irregular migrants. It's very difficult to assess the real figure of the irregular migrants, maybe 1 million, someone who is telling about 2 million, maybe in the middle is the reality. But so the point is that there is a very massive migration from sub-Saharan country, mostly from West Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, but also Mali, and Niger, of course, and also from Eastern Africa, so Horn of Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Eritrea, and also Sudan. The point is that in this year, you cannot compare the numbers of sub-Saharan migrants in Libya with the number of sub-Saharan migrants landing in Italy. You know that in 2008, the arrival from Libyan coastline were about 30,000, 35,000 people in comparison with thousands and thousands of migrants in Libya. The point is that there is a strong change between the reality and the representation of Libya. Reality is that Libya is basically a country of destination. The representation of Libya was that was intended to promote this idea of Libya like a sort of corridor between sub-Saharan Africa and Europe. This representation was not just a sort of casuality, but was a strategy that Gaddafi was precisely setting up in order to bargain a political play with Italy and Europe. The deal was very clear. So Gaddafi was ready, or so was able, to manage, control the migration across the Mediterranean Sea, and in exchange, Italy and Europe were able to support the Gaddafi recognition in the international arena. Gaddafi's Libya comes from a period of strong isolation during the 1980s. And so the new Libya of the last period of Gaddafi was so committed in open the market and to have a completely change in comparison with the past history of the regime. And the relationship with Italy and Europe was so important for Libyan regime in order to promote his new political orientation and the recognition in the international arena. The outcome on the side of migrants was basically the externalization, securitization of the Italian and European southern border, and a lot of policies of containment. But not just containment, because we have containment and we have detention and we have also deportation policies. And of course, deportation is not the same than containment. And I think that a side effect was also the increasing of racism and intolerance against sub-Saharan migrants, against black migrants in Libya. Yes, of course, the relationship, so the Italian-Libyan relations during the 2000 was intended to shape international cooperation on security and police. There was an agreement for readmission, but also there was this, this sort of advanced policy of containment that was the so-called pushback policy. After the sign of the Italian-Libyan treaty of friendship, partnership and cooperation in 2008, Italy was able to jointly patrolling the Libyan coastline, and they were able to stop the migrants on the sea and to leading back the migrants to the Libyan coastline. In reality, the pushback strategy is a complex strategy. So the pushing backs is just the first stage. The second stage is the detention of migrants in some detention camp in Libya. And the third step is the deportation of those migrants from Libya towards their home countries, or mostly towards other countries, for example, Niger. The point was that the first and second step were working very well, were working well from the point of view of the Italian and Libyan cooperation, but the last step, deportation, was not working well, because usually migrants, they stay in the Libyan jail, and there is no a great commitment from the Libyan government, from Gaddafi regime, to accomplish this program of final deportation. Why? But in my opinion, because of the good relations between the Gaddafi regime and many African countries that are the home countries of many migrants. And second point, migrants, they still important for the Libyan economy, and they also are fueling a sort of circle of exploitation, because if you are not able to be deported abroad, you have a simple option: or you stay in the jail, or you have money to pay a ransom or a bribe to be freed. So this is another important point in the circle of migration. Corruption is, of course, one of the main points in the circle of Libyan the Libyan circle of migration. Of course, Italy and Europe, they tried to manage the issue of human rights of migrants, but they were not able to do that, because when Italy was trying to say that the responsibility to assess the right, the human rights of migrants, was on the side of the Libyan government, Gaddafi in actuality, immediately closed down the office of the International Organization for the Human Rights in Libya. And of course, we have to mention that later on, in 2012, Italy was condemned by the European Court for the Human Rights for this strategy, for this action of pushing back the migrants on the basis of principle of non-refoulement. I would like just to add some words about the perspective of the ordinary Libyans, because I think that are very interesting. Made a short comparison between ordinary Libyans and ordinary Italians or other Europeans citizens, because there is some research, some papers that are underlying the similarity of perception, representation of sub-Saharan migrants in Libya in comparison with Italy or other European countries. So like in Italy, in Libya, ordinary people are representing sub-Saharan migrants in terms of people who are still in work, they are criminals, they are spreading disease, above all, they are people who are Africanizing Libya. Of course, we have to mention that the national identity of Libya, since the independence in 1951, was based strongly on Islamic identity, of course, during the King Idris period, not of course, a general identity or general belonging to Islam. So the Sanusi order Islam. And then during the period of Gaddafi, the idea of Libya that was promoted by the Gaddafi regime was based on Islam again, but also on the Arab or pan-Arab identity. And so this idea that a mass of black African people coming in Libya is powerful, put in question the identity, the Arab identity of Libya. And also, of course, we have to stress the point that historically Libya, just the population of Libya is composed from many African, black Africans. So we have black people in Libya, we have black Libyans. But the point is that the representation in terms of Arabness and whiteness. Just last point on this topic. Yes, of course, Libya is a post-colonial country, is a post-colonial state, and Italy was fighting for more than 20 years for get Libya, for impose Italian rule on Libya. But the other point is that Libya is also a post-slavery society. Slavery was an important shape of Libyan society up to the middle of 1990, up to the middle of the last century. And so, you know, the legacy of the slavery is still working in Libya. And it's so common to find in a city like Tripoli a hierarchy that is not simple a hierarchy by different skills or different working position, but it's also a hierarchy that is you know, is very linked to the color of the skin and to the some cultural and post-racist conceptualization of the relationship between Libyans and the others. For example, so usually the Arabs are in the main position, the Libyans are in the main position, and then there is other Arabs that are working in the middle position, the black Africans are at the bottom of the of this hierarchy. Very quickly, we can say that in Gaddafi Libya, so we, of course, the migrants are supplying very cheap labor for the Libyan economy. They represented a powerful leverage in Libyan relation with Italy, and they also offered a convenient distraction from international dissatisfaction with the regime. What's happened in 2011 when there was the uprising in Libya and then the civil war? But in my opinion, there is a lot of continuity. Libyan economy is still growing very fast until the summer 2014, when in actuality the conflict in Libya was changing a lot because there was a sort of, we can say, a new war. Also, the sub-Saharan migrants are still traveling to Libya, looking mostly for job. And Libya, we can say, is still mainly a country of destination. On the other side, there is a lot of continuity also from the also in the relationship between Italy, Europe, and the new or former Libyan authorities. Italy was so committed in recovering the former system of control and monitoring of migrants across the Mediterranean Sea, this Italian commitment was more and more became also a European commitment. But also there is some changes after the 2011. So there is the exploitation, detention, deportation of migrants became more and more evident. There was also an increasing criminalization of migration in close connection with the civil war. It also another change is that also Libyans became migrants. Migrants or IDPs, refugees, depend on the situation. The Italian commitment to recover the control of the Mediterranean space led Italy to sign two agreements with the new Libyan authority, the first one in February 2012 and the second one just a couple of months ago in January 2017. Basically, the idea is still the same, cooperation on security and police, and this idea to control, to stop the departure from the Libyan coastline. Why Italy was obliged to sign two agreements? Because of the instability of the country. Of course, the first agreement was signed with some Libyan authority that are not still in power today, and Italy need a new agreement. There is any difference between those agreements? Yes, because the agreement of the 2017 agreement is very close to the agreement of 2008. So the idea, not the idea, but so the practice is to start again with the pushback strategy. And in the last few weeks, the Libyan coastline was involved in many action to stop the activity of smuggling across the Mediterranean Sea. Italy was not only able to sign an agreement and to promote the control of the coastline. Italy was also able and involved in, again, the detention and deportation policies in Libya, in the Libyan territory. According to the IOM, just in the 2012 and 13, about 25,000 people were deported from Libya, basically towards Niger, but also some people was deported, for example, in Eritrea. And all we know that if some people were deported in Eritrea, they are deported directly to the jail in Eritrea, because it's a crime in Eritrea to escape from the country because they are subject to the military service. Italy was also involved in monitoring some detention camps in Libya. It's very difficult to assess the real, so the the degree of Italian involvement in those activities, but also in my field, I find that many people was able to tell me that some carabinieri, some Italian police, was monitoring some detention camps. It's difficult to say for do what. Libya, but in any case, so Libya is still a big problem. And Italy and Europe, they know very well that the Libyan crisis is not ready to be solved. The instability in Libya is still very widespread. And the idea at this point of Italy and Europe, in my opinion, is that Europe, more than Italy at this point, is very committed in deploying those containment policies in other African countries southwards, for example in Nigeria, in Sudan, of course, and also in Ethiopia and Eritrea. And there is this idea of replicate the containment policies from Libya to other contexts, to other countries. The deal is still more or less the same. Those countries are ready to control the movement of people, and in exchange they have recognition, international recognition, and money and international cooperation. This is a little bit different in comparison with Libya, because Gaddafi Libya doesn't need money. Libya was during the Gaddafi time a quite rich country. Gaddafi's Libya had a very strong and powerful program of international cooperation, and during the 2000, Gaddafi's Libya was counterbalanced the international cooperation, for example, of Chinese international cooperation, or also the program of France or United States or United Kingdom. So basically, Libya was needing international recognition. In those cases, Ethiopia, Eritrea, or Sudan, for example, they need both. They need international recognition. You just imagine Eritrea is possibly the last country completely isolated from the world, and also the Sudan of Bashir is. Need a lot of international recognition, but they also need international cooperation. Last point, the criminalization of migration. So during the conflict, of course, the smugglers has a great opportunity to smuggle in migrants in a very quick and easy way, and of course also the network of smuggling was increasing a lot. But the last point is that also the status of migrants was changing, because there is a sort of increasing overlapping between the status of regular migrant and the status of irregular migrants. So during the Gaddafi Libya, if you are working, if you are papers, you cannot be jailed, basically. Could be some exception, but so basically, if you are rooted inside the Libyan society, you cannot be jailed. After the 2011, the situation was changing, because also people, sub-Saharan Africans, who are the papers, maybe people who are residing in Libya since 5 or 10 years, they are risking to be jailed just because they was regarded as a sort of pocket money, that you can jail the people and asking for a bribe. Any hope? In conclusion, I would like just to address this experience that is relatively new of human corridor that was promoted in 2016 in Syria through Lebanon, and now is opening another corridor towards Ethiopia in 2017. The human corridor was based on an agreement between the Ministry of Italian Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Italian Internal or Home Affairs, and then private sponsors. That was basically Sant'Egidio, Tavola Vardese, Conferenza Episcopale Italiana, that are all religious institutions. I think that the experiment of human corridor is very important just to prove that the containment policies are not the only solution. So there is other good practices. And for example, the human corridor could be one. This idea it could be very powerful. Very powerful in the Italian society and for the Italian politicians, maybe. The point is that, okay, that could be a good practice, a good response for the human corridor, but there is also many problems, in my opinion, in Africa or in Lebanon. Because when you open a human corridor, you are selecting a lot of the migrants. I think that the Ethiopian case is very clear, so it's very relevant. If Ethiopia now is becoming the starting point for the corridor, you are selecting in Ethiopia many Somalis, Eritreans, and South Sudanese people who are possibly entitled to take the asylum or protection in Italy. Okay. But the point is that you are saying that Ethiopia is a good country, so it's a safe country. That is not the reality. In Ethiopia there is emergency law since the October 2016. There was many people who are in jail, and other, unfortunately, that died in the riots against the Ethiopian government, especially in Adana district, Nazareth in Amharic language. A lot of Oromo people that was not only jailed and killed, but a lot of those people was leaving the country, for example, take rescue in Somaliland. And this is a paradox, because Somaliland usually is a country who produce migrants, not is a country of destination. But so this is changing again. So if you consider Ethiopia as a safe state, you are selecting a lot the reality. And you are not ready to recognize that also Ethiopia is involved in the regional crises that are producing migration, and usually you are, and at the end you are covering the responsibility of the Ethiopian government in generating those influx of migration, and also you are covering the responsibility of the Ethiopian government in relation to the human rights, for example, of Oromo people. That's it. Thanks a lot.
Merci beaucoup, Antonio.